There are secrets out there, guys. Performance marketing secrets, and knowing just one or two of them can absolutely light up your funnels. Let's go. This is the Revenue Driven CMO. I'm your host, Chris McKinnick. Join me as I uncover the secrets of the world's most elite CMOs marketing leaders. The Revenue Driven CMO is sponsored by Web Mechanics, the AI-driven performance agency that makes you smarter. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Revenue Driven CMO. I'm your host, Chris Mechanic. Really excited for today's guest. She has been called a force of nature. She came up as a designer, an art director, gained extensive experience in pretty much the entire retail e-commerce world in digital marketing, serving in leadership roles at Express and Lane Bryant. Currently, she is at Root Insurance, which is a really exciting, disruptive insurance fintech playing in the archaic and $1 trillion car insurance industry in a very disruptive way. Creating some really powerful products, promoting fairness and simplicity. So excited to learn about that as well. But ladies and gentlemen, welcome Miss Jill Kellett, VP Product and Marketing at Root Insurance. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Chris. Thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah, super duper excited to have you here. We had a fascinating talk in our prep call, and we were like, there was just so many topics, we almost couldn't choose one. So this might be one in a series for us, but you've achieved some incredible success in your career, and I can tell you're just getting started. Tell the audience, like, what is one of your biggest and best kept secrets to success in marketing?
Sure. I think one of my biggest secrets is just how to really evaluate and set your creative team up to drive your business. Yeah. It's not something that a lot of companies really think about as a huge revenue driver or as a huge conversion and, you know, needle mover, but it really can be if you've got the right team in place.
Yeah. And that's surprising that clients or companies rather don't think of creative as the needle mover, because I personally think of creative as the one and only eternal needle mover. Like, in a world where, you know, every day Google Ads is taking control back, Facebook, Meta, they're all taking control back. This is the trend. They're all saying, oh, you know, Advantage Plus, oh, Performance Max, like, just give us your budget and upload a bunch of assets and let us do the rest. In that world, like, I can easily foresee a world where, you know, a lot of the media buying work is more or less automated, and almost the only leverage point is creative. So how do you go about doing that? How do you set your teams up for success, and how do you get the best possible work from them day in and day out?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think we are seeing a huge shift in the art and science of marketing. And as the science becomes more and more automated, more and more frankly owned by some of these companies, creative is really the big lever. And so I've had the privilege of working both on the agency side of things as well as in-house over the last 15 plus years. And over that time, I've gotten to observe and also work directly with a myriad of marketing-focused creative teams that fall all across the spectrum of really low impact to really high impact.
Yeah.
And just like with most other things, if you observe enough samples, patterns start to emerge. And so that's really where this whole, like, hey, how do I get the most from my creative team starts, is what are the patterns to observe and how to work within those patterns. And on the low impact side, and I'm curious what you've seen on both of these spectrums too, Chris, is on the low impact side, right? You see creative and market that just doesn't perform against goals. And yeah, behind the curtain, you see all sorts of dysfunctions. Basically, everything that Patrick Lencioni's book, Five Dysfunctions of a Team, describes are present.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. And then on the high impact side, you see performant marketing, and behind the curtains, a pretty balanced crew. Not to say they're perfect by any stretch, but they've managed to achieve some sort of balance amongst marketers, analysts, yeah, data nerds and creatives that allow creatives to do their best work for the company.
Yeah, I can see why you're such a badass. You're like total left brain, right brain, right? Because you're a creative by profession, but you're talking about samples and observing and patterns and Lencioni, like all in one sentence. So I can tell your brain fires in all of the quadrants.
Yeah.
But no, I have experienced that. And you know, there are in my experience, two extremes of the design spectrum, and the way that I describe it is a little bit kind of like highbrow on the one side, where you know, the like symptoms or how you know somebody's highbrow is how they respond to criticism, how they respond to revision requests, you know, things like that.
Huge.
On the other side, I consider it, or I think of it almost like direct response focused. Mm-hmm. So like there's like certain designers, even that like they'll call themselves sometimes conversion designers or performance creatives. And oftentimes on that side of the spectrum, team functioning aside, we can get into team functioning, but this side of the spectrum is very much paired at the hip with the media buyers and with the data team. They're in platform. They oftentimes, you know, are looking at the data and coming up with the ideas themselves, right? So that whole like brief process is much less lengthy. You know, it's actually like a brief where, and oftentimes even can just be communicated verbally. And I love when that happens. Like I love when that synergy happens and they're just all sitting together kind of ideating and it just happens so smoothly.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting because I don't know how we got to this place where we treat creatives like children, where we have to outline, you know, every single thing in this crazy brief that they don't even like.
Yeah.
Like, how did we get to that place? And yeah, the best creative teams, you can have really engaging conversation, the right amount of documentation. Everybody's linked at the hip and we're able to go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think that the majority of the time, it's unfortunately sort of, and I know highbrow, that's not the best name. Like that could be offensive. Sure. I don't know like a better way to describe it, but I think unfortunately the majority of creative teams like lean toward this side. Yeah. I'm sure that everybody is trying to get toward this side. So like, what advice would you give to a leader that's got a team that is, you know, leaning toward this side? They could very well be talented. You know, maybe they are skilled in direct response, but they're not functioning like they should. What advice would you give them to sort of like shift them over to the high impact side of the equation?
Yeah, great question. It really boils down to two things. Do you have the right people in the right seats?
Yep.
If yes, then do they have the right rhythm established in the team? And I'm talking about the royal team of marketers, analysts, data scientists, creatives that establishes a heartbeat, gives everybody this like unified sense of forward without suffocating them. Creatives in particular, just it's highly emergent work. It's highly volatile work. So you can't always shove it through a meat grinder and have it pop out a sausage. You have to give it space, but not so much space that, you know, you're off in this ethereal land. So I think it boils down to those two things. And so I'll deep dive a little bit on, okay, evaluating who's on staff. Making sure the right people are in the right seats. That sounds great, Jill. How do you do that really tactically? And I've done this a few times. I've been called in to different roles specifically for this reason, to come in, evaluate teams, make changes in smart, strategic ways. You don't want to just always keep things how it is. You don't always want to blow up the situation. That's not what we're after here. We're trying to be really smart and surgical. And that really, what it really boils down to is one, spend time observing the team as a whole. Observe the positive and negative dynamics. between the different folks. Also, spend time individually with each person. Really get to know them, what makes them tick, what makes them wilt, what motivates them in career. I think with creatives, I've found purpose and meaning and does my work go live and have some kind of impact, like means more than some more traditional factors that you would think about some of these roles.
Yeah.
You got to get curious and become an investigator. I mean, at the end of the day, like you need to make this your job for 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
And then as you do that, so you're observing, you're taking notes, you're really looking at the dynamic of the whole, you're looking at the parts and the individuals. And I really, you know, this includes designers, writers, ops folks, anyone who's like really engaged in the creative process. You really need to evaluate the whole system. It's not just pull the designers aside and have this kind of focus. It's really everybody.
Yeah.
And when you take 4 huge steps back after all your observations, you need to evaluate each person against 6 competencies. And these are the 6 that I've found to be true in most cases. There are some caveats, I'm sure. And you can have some one-offs that are outliers that don't fall within these competencies. But if you can identify folks that have these 6 competencies and then make sure they're in the right level and role, you'll be in a great spot. And the first one is curiosity. This probably comes as no surprise. There's a really great Forbes article about curious people. And, you know, how I evaluate this is I just sit down and ask them if they're, you know, what their hobbies are, if they're learning anything new, whether that's for work or personal, or maybe they're like, man, I'm trying my first DIY project, whatever it is, getting really curious. How's it going? If they, you know, take an interest, see where they're hitting snags, see what they're learning about. What are they learning about the topic? What are they learning about themselves? You know, the Forbes article says, you know, a great interview question is, tell me something you've taught yourself in the last 6 months. How did you teach yourself this skill or idea? And what was the result? Sometimes it's a bad result. That's awesome. We're not looking for perfection. We're looking for like, are these people interested in things and in learning and being just genuinely curious about problems that they're trying to solve?
Okay, love that. So curiosity, and we've got those questions like, hey, what are your hobbies? What are you learning? What have you taught yourself? Love that. So what's competency too? You could write a book, by the way, on this. I love this.
Maybe that'll be my next thing. Number 2 is discipline problem solving. This one is my favorite one to do to a team, I'll be honest. And it is something that I do to teams. It's not something that is more subtle than that. What I love to do is give them a really vague prompt and a time box. Okay. So, and see what they do, see how they organize, see who really is the natural leader when you strip people of the day-to-day titles and roles and rhythms that are there. You like really light the ground on fire and you learn some cool stuff. I walked into a team at one point, and this team, you know, said, man, they really like working on like big creative problems. And they feel like they're working on small creative problems. I'm like, awesome. I'm going to take you guys offline for 2 weeks. That's pretty extreme. But I mean, to give them a big creative problem to solve, you've got to give them some big space. So this was kind of a special situation where I had the support of my CEO and others to do this exercise. And I gave them the prompt of, how do we build trust in a brand, in our brand? We were a young brand. We were an untrusted brand. We had some really interesting Google results of, is this company legit? Mm-hmm. And I gave them, I was like, you've got 2 weeks to concept and really think about how are we going to move the needle on what we're calling trust in this brand? How would you measure that? How do you think about it? I didn't involve marketers. I just set them free and what came back was 72 different concepts. It was crazy. And some of them were great and some of them were outright terrible. And then everything in between. And then you give them the prompt, okay, if you were CEO, narrow it down to three, you know, can you do that? So you're really seeing, can they diverge? Can they think big and go wide and come up with options? And then can they decide? Can they converge and come back together? That's discipline problem solving. And not all creative teams can do it. Some creative teams, to your point, will say, well, where's my 15-page brief? And that would be the end of the conversation.
Yeah, 100%. No, I love that one. Give a vague prompt and a timeline.
Yeah, that's very important.
Yeah, and the how do we build trust in the brand is a great one. I also like the idea, like from the observatory phase, just like seeing who rises as the natural leader. That's really interesting.
Yeah, because sometimes it's not the creative director. Sometimes it's a junior level creative who just gets it. And that's okay. And I'm not saying that you don't need the creative director, but what I am saying is, man, harness that. Make sure they're in the right seat. Make sure that when you go into the part two of establishing the rhythm, that it's a rhythm that helps raise the bar for the people who really are your all-stars. It's really important.
Yeah. No, that was a unique concept too. So we've got two of the six. We've got curiosity, discipline, problem solving. This is where you're looking for, I suppose, from individuals as well as the team as a whole.
Yeah.
What's number three?
Systems thinking.
Okay. I like that.
So I have run into many creative teams who you hand them a brief and they hand you back an ad, one ad. They're like, well, you asked for a billboard. Here's your billboard. I'm like, well, let's think a little bit broader. Let's think how this might work within our total system. How does it work within our total communication system, right? How am I to be sure, right, if I'm getting one of something, that this is really the right way to go? And again, the way to really open the door and to the right conversations around A/B testing, variations, getting to performant creative across different channels is, man, really facilitating the way that they think about systems. I've done this a few different ways. One of my favorite, it's pretty straightforward, is you do a quick brief. It can be on any project. It can be a project in your current workflow. It's not one where you have to take people offline. And ask them to provide options. And just leave it at that. Can you
ask them to provide what now? Sorry.
Options.
Oh, options. Okay.
And observe how they structure their options naturally. Ask them why they provided these options. What was their thinking? We'll see how they're thinking through that problem. Then when it comes time to for revision, introduce a framework. So a framework that I like to introduce is what's called the limbic map. And, you know, humans make decisions with the limbic part of their brain, right? We're just little lizards running around at the end of the day. And then we defend those decisions rationally with our frontal cortex. And so the limbic map really shows, you know, that when you're in that limbic part of your brain, when you're making these buying decisions, you're seeking stimulation, dominance, or balance. And so I love giving this framework to creatives, like, hey, help me if there's someone that I'm trying to activate their stimulant, you know, part of their brain. How would you take these options that you just gave me and push those towards that? How would you push them towards dominance? How would you push them towards balance? And good news, if you've got curious people, they're going to scratch their head and be like, that's a great question. So you also kind of get another dose of, hey, is this person curious? But then creatives who work in systems will end up with something that looks like a weird grid of stuff. You know, here was the original ad. Here's how I pushed it three different ways. And here's the rationale for why I believe this pushes this ad towards this limbic area or another. Or they'll create some kind of really well-organized presentation of some sort. So that's really what you're looking for. But that's a favorite exercise I love to introduce. And I like the limbic map because it's pretty visceral. You don't have to explain it too much. When you really look at the image of the limbic map, if you just Google it, you'll see it. You're like, oh, okay, this makes sense to me. So it's not something you have to spend a lot of time educating a creative on.
Right. Love it. So curiosity, discipline, problem solving, systems thinking. And then number four.
This is a big one. Ability to disagree and commit.
I love that. Where'd you learn this? Did you just make this up?
Well, disagree and commit. No. Gosh.
I love this.
From a book. I'm blanking on what book. I'll have to look it up and send
it to you. That's
all right. But
no problem.
Disagree and commit is the value, or I guess what the competency that I personally care about the most. I've worked on teams and I've observed so many teams, and you talk to them about, tell me about your best and worst project. And there will always be these people, or I shouldn't say always, but some people will still talk about that one time when they were right and nobody listened and nobody listens to me and it sucks the life out of a team, especially if you have too many of those going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so to test this out and to see if your teams have the ability to commit, what I do is I figure out what they're going to disagree with, frankly. I learn about them. I go through a project. I'm like, ooh, okay, they really disagree here. Great. And then they kind of disagree here. And I might try some different subtleties within it. And I say, hey, we're going to make this decision. It's my decision to make. I'm going to make it. I understand and I hear you that you totally disagree with this. You've made some really valid points. Are you able to commit to this? And some people will flat out say no. It is fascinating to see that. And if they say no, ask why. Figure out why. Like, maybe they really do have a compelling reason. But at the end of the day, we need to find something that we can use to see if they truly can disagree and commit. Bonus points, if you can come back and tell them it failed and see how they respond. So this is where I will admit, and anyone on my existing teams, I apologize if you didn't know that I did this already. Sometimes I will tell a fib and tell them something failed, just to see what the response is. Even if the creative worked, or even if whatever it was that we were disagreeing and committing on did create a desirable result, sometimes just to see, I will, and again, this is just in the evaluation phase. I do not pull these punches on the day-to-day. That would be wholly unfair.
Yeah.
But I'll tell them, hey, it failed. And I'll ask them, what do you think we should do next? And if they snap right back to, you should just listen to me. You should do the thing that I said, versus get curious. Well, what failed? What do you mean? Is there anything? Let's think about maybe what we did explore. Or, yeah, that thing I brought up, maybe that could help, but I don't know. Maybe would you be open to testing that? Like, that's a much healthier conversation. If it turns into accusatory, you should have listened to me. I knew it. There's something to coach on there. There's a big thing to coach on there, because again, this is one of those competencies that is such an ordinary skill that is extraordinarily painful if it's not being exhibited.
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%. We've got a framework here. So it's agreed or aligned, right?
Yeah.
So for an unpopular decision, agreed means like, 100%, I agree, and we're moving. Aligned just means like, I don't love it, but I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly. And if we align, we're going to move forward as a team. And even if it fails, we'll solve it together. We're not going to blame and point fingers. That's awesome. I like that. I like that phrasing of it too.
Yep. Cool. Thank you. All right. So we are into number five at this point, and I'll recap all of them at the end.
Yeah.
So what's number five?
Number five is they want to come to the analytics meeting. Really, number five is outcome orientation, right? They are interested in the outcomes. To your point, I mean, you mentioned this earlier, they understand the platform. They understand what we're trying to drive. Like, they're intimate with the outcomes of the business. So outcome orientation is the fifth competency. And again, that could look like wanting to come to the analytics meeting. They like to hear when their A-B tests fail. It's not a wound to their soul. It's a, oh man, what happened? That's really neat. Right? They're interested in those outcomes.
100%. Yep. Okay. I love that one. I like that aren't a wound to their soul. All right. And then what's number six?
Last one's pretty simple. Positive dynamics. This one really boils down to what you observe when you look at the team as a group. You will naturally find people who, as they engage with others, can create more positive dynamics. And you'll find folks that as they engage with others, just the energy in the room goes down. This one's much more touchy-feely. It's definitely, there's a reason why it's number six on the list. But it is important just to recognize, man, there are instances, and sometimes it's multiple people who, like, man, these two people are great individuals, but when they get together, it's like they melt down. They cannot produce a compelling product. That's important. That's really important to know.
100%. So let me recap here. I love this framework. So what you're going to do when you are deciding or determining the, I'll call it the alchemy of your team, like how well they're working together, whether they're putting their best work out, you're looking at who's on staff. You're not doing an overhaul, right? You're going to be really smart and surgical, but you're going to take a few weeks, spend time observing that team as a whole. How are they interacting? How are they engaging? Spend time also individually with each person. What really makes them tick? And what motivates them, right? You want to be kind of have your curiosity hat on, like you're an investigator here. And spend a few weeks, 3-4 weeks doing that. And it's not just with designers, it's with your, you know, with your writers, your editors, your operations folks. Take that step back. And then once you've done that observation, then you take four huge steps back and you look at six different dimensions or six competencies. Curiosity, how curious are people? Disciplined problem solving. And I love the vague prompt example. Systems thinking is number three. The ability to disagree and commit is number four. Outcome orientation, being curious and interested in the data is number five. And then positive dynamics. It's just like, are they working together well? Are they getting things done and putting out great work? I love it, Jill. That's a really useful framework. I'm very impressed by that.
Awesome. Thanks. It's definitely served me over the years and has prevented a lot of heartache. You know, if you just go through it and you really are somewhat methodical and deliberate about it, you can make really smart choices for your team. And just little tweaks, little coaching moments will emerge. You also may find that people are in the wrong seats or this just isn't a good fit. And that's the hardest part, I would say, is the fun part is using this framework and really diving in with people and getting to know them.
Yeah.
The hard part is then being willing to act on it. And that is, you cannot do that carelessly. You really have to be as surgical as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Those are some of the hardest conversations.
Oh.
But, you know, in my experience, when, if it's not working for you, it's probably not working for the other person either. Okay. You know, like they're probably not enjoying the idea of going to work every day, right?
That's right. That's right. And no, nobody wants to go to work and feel like they're bad at their job or feel like the department is bad or, right? We don't want that. We want work to give us some sort of purpose, especially as creatives. And yeah, it's just 9 times out of 10, you find that these people who aren't a good fit, they would prefer to be somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. So I have one question for you on this whole thing, and then we can move in. I'm curious to learn a bit more about Root before our time's up. But the one question is, how do you go about this observatory period in a remote world?
Ooh, that is a great question. I think the big thing, so individual, not much changes. I would say you can have some pretty rich one-on-one conversations in a remote world. I think if there is any opportunity to be in person, I know I'm in Denver. I've got some people in Boulder and about 30 minutes away. It's pretty easy for me to pop down if there's a proximity at all and just meet at a coffee shop. However, with groups, that's much tougher. And so there's kind of two ways to approach this. One is if you're able to host an on-site, some companies support that, have budgets for it. Root's really great at that. We bring people in from all over several times throughout the year. I feel really lucky. And we get to design, right, our whole on-site activities. And this could be a really dynamic activity for a creative team, is going through and giving those vague problems. And you can see dynamics as you go through that exercise.
Yeah.
So that might be one approach. The other approach, if you're really just trying to observe the day-to-day, is get people out of email and get people out of Slack. Get them in group Zoom meetings. See who turns off their camera. See who's engaging. Like, literally take notes on who speaks, who's dominating the room, who's not even on camera. And, you know, getting a feel for that. And then as you pull people in a room, again, I think virtually you can see, I would say, the more dominant players really visibly. So sometimes you might have to design situations where you purposefully pull those players out of the room to be able to give space for other folks. You can also enlist the help of folks that you trust. Like, let's say I'm, you know, a vice president of creative or a chief marketing officer, and I've got this one like ops person who just gets it. I've already evaluated her. She already displays all these things. Asking her to like pull some people aside and tell me what your group conversations are like. Have them create some documentation for you. Have them, even as we look at like asynchronous communication, emails, Slacks, have them make some observations around how the group coordinates asynchronously as well. Sometimes I would say in a remote environment, you may have to enlist some help in your investigation.
Yeah, 100%. One thing that I know I've done at times, because we use Asana, and so that's where all the work happens.
Right.
It's not a very efficient way to go about it, but it is very informative and very interesting at the very least. But usually I'll get some takeaways just by like looking at a task or a project and getting sort of forensic, you know, going back like, who created this task? Like, let me look at the description of the task. When was it created? Like, when was it picked up? It's a very time consuming exercise, but very, very revealing in terms of like how things actually work.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. If you are using an Asana, a Monday, a Jira, you can get tons of information out of those systems, assuming the teams are using it, which sometimes in-house creative teams I've witnessed don't use those systems.
Yeah.
Agencies, I feel like, are much better at doing that. So, but that is, if that system is in place, man, use that data.
I just got a product idea because it's so insightful, that data. What if there was a tool that you could use, plug it into your Asana, and it has like, you know, a bunch of data in it, so it can see basically like, you know, the types of tasks, like how, like it could over time establish some benchmarks for like how long these things should take, how many comments should be taking place, like sentiment and analysis.
Yeah, that would be incredible.
I'm going to start a side hustle.
Yeah, do it. Yeah, start it up.
Done. Cool. Well, thank you so much. That was informative. It was inspiring. It was valuable. Like, I think, and with a creative team, absolutely. Even without, you know, even just a normal team, like those six,
exactly.
Like, those six things apply to like any marketing team really as well, I would say.
That's right. And the only added layer on your creative team is, yeah, you still have to evaluate their portfolio. You still have to look at their work and say like, man, does this look like an ad? Or does this look like stuff on a page? Right. These competencies are not, they're pretty ordinary traits, right? And they're traits that are useful across a myriad of different teams.
Yeah, 100%. So let's talk a little bit about Root. It seems like you've been there for some time. It seems like you've been kicking ass and taking names. Like on LinkedIn, it's just like every year, it's like, boom, promotion, promotion, promotion. And now you're VP product and marketing. What does that, I want to hear about some of your wins, but before that, like what's a day in the life like for you? Like, what are you mostly spending most of your time on?
Yeah. So it's a good question. Like you said, my role has changed pretty dramatically over the course of 5 years at Root. And really, be honest, I'm a utility player. I come in and I help with turnarounds of different types. That's kind of why people hire me. So, you know, turning around a creative team was kind of assignment number one. Helping us pivot into new marketing strategies was somewhat of assignment number two. And then we went through war during this inflationary time. I mean, there is so much going on with the insurance industry today. And as that was really unfolding, I was partnering with our chief technology officer and our CEO to really, and our CFO and all the other executives at Root to say, man, how do we manage this? How do we make a pretty significant financial and strategic turnaround? So a day in my life right now looks like, man, we've made the financial turnaround. I'm keeping an eye on that kind of permanently because that cannot change. And that's something I'm deeply passionate about. I don't believe that we can serve customers if we're not in business. If our financials are not stable, then I can't do the other part of my job, which is really bringing the customer back into focus, both on a product and a marketing perspective. We have an amazing data science team that runs our paid media spend and is making crazy amounts of optimizations on that side. So I'm really involved with, great, how do we bring the art part of that into the marketing org? How do we run some new and different and less measurable tests? We're partnering on some really great work in that space. And then on the product side, again, leading a team of six product managers that span everything from onboarding experience to payments and billing, and saying, man, how do we make this infrastructure scalable, strong, and customer-oriented? So that's kind of what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. So you lit up when you were talking about your data science team, and this is a good seg into the wins category, but like, what are some of the wins that you guys have produced over the years that you're most proud of?
Yeah, I would, you know, without getting too deep into insurance jargon, I'll say that, again, we've managed a pretty radical financial turnaround in the past year and a half. And we've done that by managing to hold a superior loss ratio and in a really challenging market while significantly growing new writings. And honestly, like, really working in partnership with data science across our entire product suite and into marketing has really been a huge leverage in that turnaround and in that stability that now we're able to create. You know, in a lot of ways, we are building an insurance machine that has not been built before. And
yeah.
it has been really exciting and humbling and scary and fun to work on that.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. And I mean, I love the brand. I love the website. I love your presence on social. So you guys are kicking ass.
Thanks.
What are you challenged with? What's keeping you up at night at the moment?
Man, I think the insurance industry as a whole has kept me up at night for the past 5 years. I come from retail. You know, I always joke about, like, I really know how to sell pants on the internet. Like, I'm really good at that. But insurance is just a fascinating and wicked market to disrupt. If you Google car insurance, it'll autofill with some wild stuff. Car insurance is too expensive, a waste of money, extortion, et cetera. It gets really heated really fast. And in this industry, you see NPS scores for some insurance companies below that of government services. So people would rather go to the DMV than deal with these companies.
Wow.
And then add to that historic levels of inflation, natural disasters, and you're seeing the Wall Street Journal run headlines about how buying home and auto insurance is impossible. And they're not wrong. It is impossible in so many cases, and it becomes a tax on the poor. And that's something that we talk a lot about at Root, and is something that I think a lot about as I'm trying to fall asleep, much as it drives me crazy. And, you know, when you zoom out, it's just really fascinating. Like, why is it like this? Why do customers, feel this way? And you quickly realize the experience is terrible. It's form after form. The pricing is antiquated, with incumbent companies determining your rate based on which sorority you went to and your marital status, which have nothing to do with my driving and my ability to stay out of accidents.
Yeah.
And you've got these big guys spending literal billions of dollars on advertising. And a lot of these companies are a century year old or more, and are just built on outdated technology. And it's just a fascinating market that I ruminate on constantly.
Wow. No, that is fascinating. And it sounds tough, to be honest, especially compared to like e-commerce retail.
E-commerce, I was like, oh my gosh,
it's so happy.
Beautiful and simple.
Yeah.
Insurance is not beautiful or simple.
Oh my
it's
goodness.
Really wicked.
That's wild. What's on the horizon for you? What are you got? Are you investing in anything out of the ordinary this year? Any new tools or platforms or anything with AI?
Yeah, we use machine learning on the daily. So, you know, AI, not necessarily generative AI, but more traditional. It is a part of our DNA. So that's something that we're always working on. And we are making, I would say, machine learning investments in all three pillars of our strategy. So one, becoming best in the world at pricing and automation. Really figuring out how to harness data science and technology to reduce costs and give that back to customers and mm-hmm. give them what they want and deserve. That's a huge investment we're making this year.
I love that. I love your customer orientation. It sounds like you're really, truly, and authentically an advocate for the customer,
which is
cool.
It's been tough, again, kind of really focused on the business for the past year and a half. But this is the strategic turn we're making, is like, man, gotta point back to that customer.
Yeah.
We don't exist if they don't care about us.
Yep. 100%. 100%. Well, this has been one of the best interviews that I've done lately. I've got a lot of takeaways. I'm very, very impressed with you. It sounds like you've got an amazing team. I can see that you guys are doing great stuff. So I will definitely follow along with your career and with Root from afar, and watch you guys, you know, as you continue to disrupt this old and very very ready to be disrupted industry.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. One last thing. Do you want to do the lightning round?
Sure. Let's
do
it.
Time?
Yeah.
All right. So three questions. Number one is, if you were to start a side hustle, what side hustle would that be?
I would be a CrossFit coach. My partner
nice.
Owned the gym, and he's an amazing human, and I would totally work for him, and I love CrossFit.
Awesome. I love that. Cool. Question number two is top three books or authors or influencers or podcasts or any information source that has really impacted or inspired you?
Sure. I recently read Range by David Epstein, which is great for those of us who haven't had a linear or necessarily logical on paper career path. That's an awesome book. Do the Work by Stephen Pressfield. It's a short book. I read it every year. I recommend everyone does the same. I used to keep a stack of them on my desk when we were an in-office company, and I would just hand them out to people.
Wow, okay.
And then the last one I'll call out is a book called Reality is Not What It Seems by Carlo Rovelli. It is my favorite book of all time. It is a physics book, and it's a pretty lightweight physics book. Like, you don't have to be too heady. And it shows how the idea of reality has evolved over time as our understanding of physics has evolved over time. So it goes from the very early days up to quantum, but doesn't get into quantum. So that's, you know, a little too much for you. Oh, this is a cool book to say, like, man, we thought reality was this. Here, then it shifted to this, and then it shifted to this, right? And I think that really runs parallel to a lot of things in life, business, personally. And it's a cool book.
Very cool. I'm definitely going to check some of those out. Well, again, this has been amazing. I think you should write a book. Like, I honestly learned a lot. I'm going to go apply some of these right now. For everybody that's listening, if you learned anything or were inspired, please do us a favor. Share this with a friend or drop a 5-star rating for the pod wherever you get your podcast. We do appreciate that. And Jill, for folks that would like to learn more about you or Root Insurance, where would you direct them?
Sure. I have a website. It's jillkellett.com.
Nice.
Drop me a note on there. I also host office hours once a week, so you can just schedule through Calendly and we can chat if you've got different problems you're working through. I just love to connect with people and love to hear about different problems in business that are out there.
Nice. I'm going to be on your calendar next week.
Yeah, do it.
Cool. Well, stay on the line 1 second. We'll wrap up. But for everybody else, that was another exciting episode of Revenue Driven CMO, and we will see you next time. And that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us here today. For show notes and other episodes, visit us at revenuedrivencmo.com. That's revenuedrivencmo.com. And hey, exclusive for listeners of this podcast, Web Mechanics will do 10 to 20 hours of work for you for free. Literally no sales calls, no BS. Just give them a problem and they will put a team to work for you for free for 10 to 20 hours. Even if you're already a client, if you're struggling with demand gen, lead gen, SEO, SEM, Google ads, LinkedIn ads, conversion optimization, if you can't get Facebook or Meta ads to work for the life of you, or you can't figure out attribution, Web Mechanics will take a good hard look at whatever problem you give them, whatever programs you put in front of them, and they will give you an objective, informed opinion, plus some advice from 10 to 20 hours of senior level attention. And that's just because you're a listener of this podcast. So I would suggest take them up on this offer. It's ridiculous. Go to revenuedrivencmo.com/free, fill out the 2-minute form, and you will not regret it. Literally zero downside, unlimited potential for growth. So do yourself a favor, revenuedrivencmo.com/free, no hyphens, no punctuations. You will be happy about that decision.